Hi, welcome to the Pharmaceutical Executive Podcast. I'm Mike Holland, the managing editor of Pharmaceutical Executive, and I'm joined today with our guest, Natalie DeGraff.
Natalie DeGraff, Vice President and General Manager for Data Analytics, AI, and Machine Learning at the API Innovation Center. Prior to that, I worked at the White House under the Biden administration, working on biodefense at the National Security Council and pharmaceutical supply chain.
And that brings us right to our topic today. We're talking the API Innovation Center recently released a report on this on supply chain fragility, and the topic that we want to discuss today is the National Fragility Index. So first, I was just wondering if you could just give a brief rundown of what that report found, broadly speaking.
So the report, we did a very early release report. It's not public yet. But what we found was that anti-infectives were the most vulnerable class of drugs, which is not surprising, but also gives us an indication of where we need to be prioritizing investment. So right now we're taking that initial study and we're expanding it out to all 3,000 APIs, as well as all the downstream FTFs that come from those APIs. And looking at the entire US supply chain and assessing fragility with a score so that we can understand which individual drug, as well as classes of drugs, as well as groups of drugs, for example, hospital systems, what they might care about. We're trying to understand what are the most fragile, where should we be putting the most investment, and that will help us then direct future action.
And how would you describe the domestic supply chain at the moment?
Well, it's incredibly fragile, actually. So what we found is that when I started at API Innovation Center about 14 months ago, and during my time in the administration as well, what we see consistently is that we have lagging indicators. In this market, we do not have the ability to do predictive analytics right now, or at least we're not there yet to do predictive analytics or to anticipate when there's going to be an issue. So we have no unified index for understanding the pharmaceutical supply chain risk. We have no indicators to be able to assess it and then think about forward looking, right? And we have no real-time tracking of global risks. And so with all of those things combined, you end up with a system that is a lot of data out there, but not a lot of knowledge coming from that data. So I have a colleague that says, it's data rich, but knowledge poor. And so our hope is to work to fix that by using real-time data to help better understand the supply chain, predict those anomalies, and then be able to make better decisions so that way we all have the drugs we need when we need them.
And so it sounds like the pharma supply chain, other supply chains you're more able to predict, and this is unique to pharma.
Oh, 100%. Look at the automotive industry. Look at the semiconductor industry. Look at the retail industry. You can look at, retail, clothing, right? You get a shirt from Uniqlo. They can anticipate when there's going to be a barge at sea that has a container, on a ship, where that's going to be, when it's going to arrive. They know everything about that. It is very transparent. And because of the nature of pharmaceuticals and IP, there's been a lot of hesitancy to share. And what we've actually found is that there's quite a bit of data out there already. The IP doesn't that standing doesn't hold because the information's already out there. If you look across the globe, you can actually find most of the information anyway. So the companies that are not wanting to share, it's actually quite available if you know where to look.
And then, obviously, globally speaking, this is a bit of a unique moment, bit of a, I think some people describe as a chaotic moment. So what impacts are we already seeing from the fragility?
So right now, if you're talking about the Straits of Hormuz, which is the most pertinent, issue that we're looking at today, we are not seeing an impact. Actually, there is one site for the US supply. There is the moment that the conflict started, we did a deep analysis of the region with our partner, Kyobo, which does supply chain intelligence. And we were able to see that there was about 64 sites in the region that supplied US supply, but there's only one site that actually had an orphan drug, which is meaning the only place we can get that one thing from. And so only that one site, and that site hasn't been affected. What we are seeing is increases in freight costs to ship the pharmaceuticals. So that could increase some cost, but we're really not seeing an impact to the availability of US pharmaceutical supply chain drugs or APIs. We know that a lot of our supply in the US comes from China and India, and right now they have not had a major impact either. So without those being impacted, we're not going to feel the impact yet.
So since we're kind of talking, obviously, we can't predict things, but in your opinion, what can be done to improve the supply chain from a fragility standpoint?
Yeah, so first of all, we need to create that index that I was talking about, the ability to categorize on a drug by drug, class of drug, and then groups of drug basis. So looking at what drugs are really important to hospital systems, which drugs are really important to ASPR, the Administration for Strategic Preparedness and Response. You know, they're looking at when we have to respond in an emergency, what drugs are really important. That's very different than what hospitals need. And then we're looking at also national security drugs, drugs that are for the DoD, for the warfighter, that, you know, the unique drugs that they're really the only ones buying it, right? But it's really important that they have it. And so those are the different groups of drugs that we've created. Then taking each of the individuals and the class of drugs, giving them a numerical value. The higher the value, the more fragile it is. And that allows us to take real-time understanding of what the fragility is today and map it over time. We've never seen this before. We've never actually analytically looked at the data and said, what is the most fragile? Let's track it. Because even if we do investments in the United States to reshore domestic manufacturing of API or FDF, how do we know that we've done what we said we did without actually measuring it? And so really putting a quantifiable basis to our understanding and then being able to take that number and use that to provide recommendations that will then drive investments in the United States. We don't have to reshore everything, right? All we have to think about is which are the most critical or the most fragile for us, which ones make the most economic sense to bring back to the United States. And that might include a diverse portfolio, including Canada or Mexico, Latin America, Europe, our allied partners. It doesn't have to all just be here, but you can begin to make those decisions once you have the visibility into where the fragility actually lies.
And you know, we're discussing, kind of bringing things back home. That's obviously one of the goals of the current administration. It seems like their main way of achieving this for pharmaceuticals is through the most favored nation pricing negotiations and issuing tariffs. Has this do you see this having a positive impact on the on the supply chain?
Yeah, I mean, that's our goal, right? Is our goal is to be able to provide these recommendations both to the administration as well to the executive branch as well as to industry to say, industry, this is what we're seeing, right? So when you know, a pharmaceutical company wants to think about, you know, reshoring a plant, what makes the most sense for them to reshore? Well, it's probably going to be one that's pretty fragile in the United States right now that the administration also cares about. So you have like right now you have the FDA essential medicines list, you have ASPR's list, you have a new API reserve list, you have DoD's list, and you have a different DoD list. You have all these different lists. And so when you start to look at which are the most fragile and then compare them across the list and say, okay, you've got 28 things on here, only three are super, super fragile. The other five or six, maybe not so. You prioritize that. That gives industry a heads up on what's coming down. And then also, there's a lot of dormant capacity in the United States right now. When we say reshore, that doesn't necessarily mean putting buildings up. Let's look at who has dormant ANDAs. Who has dormant capacity? And let's start matching up that fragility with the existing capacity that's not being used in the United States. So when we reshore, it costs less money, industry's better able to respond, and they have better surety of demand because they know that there's going to be someone on the back end that will purchase it.
So it sounds like we would really need like cooperation between industry and the government to make this work, correct?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, within API Innovation Center, I feel like we're already doing that, right? Our network is over 100, 120 strong. And our goal is to, again, be able to take this information. You know, I will back up and say we started using supply chain data to drive our own investments into domestically manufacturing API. That's how we got in there. That's how I got my job, is that we were able to say, you know, which of these drugs that we're looking at make the most sense in terms of market need, you know, economic viability to not have to be subsidized, you know, looking at all of those factors, using the data to understand how to better invest. And so, yes, there is some industry, there is that engagement. We have our network right now, which we are leveraging it using the same approach. And so we would encourage everyone else to do the same. And my hope actually is that we as the United States can work closely with our allied nations, including, you know, Korea, Japan, Australia, so Four Eyes, Canada, UK, the EU, even Latin America or South America, to be able to collectively start building our own capability in decreasing our foreign dependency on China and on India.
Awesome. So, well, that covers all the questions I had. Was there anything you'd like to add?
No, I'm good. Thank you for your time today.
Of course, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thanks.